Okay, everybody, welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration.com. You can personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so you perform your best. 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate fuel with the code OXYGEN24 at Precision Fuel and Hydration.com. That's OXYGEN24, all one word. So welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and every week we bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and inspire you for your triathlon, your Ironman, your 70.3 dreams. I've got a doozy of a show for you today. Welcome aboard, Nadia. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Well, this is Nadia, everybody. She has recently returned back from Kona, having achieved the lifelong dream of racing in the Ironman World Championships out in Kona. So we're going to hear Nadia's story, but a couple of things you can do for us before we start the episode proper. Firstly, if you enjoy this podcast today, please consider following us on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts and hit like and subscribe on YouTube if you're watching that channel. I know that stuff is a thing that people say all the time, but it really helps the growth of the channel and that helps the videos get shown to people. And I'm constantly getting athlete membership calls with people saying, I don't understand how your channel doesn't have more followers than it does. And unfortunately, it's entirely down to the YouTube algorithm. So if you wouldn't mind just doing that, really helps our show pop up in front of new people. Secondly, if you're looking for help and advice with your triathlon training, please get in touch. There's a link in the show notes, or you can email us at help@oxygenaddict.com. We can help get you some coaching towards your Ironman or 70.3 this year. So, Nadia, thank you for being so patient and joining us. I'm super excited to find out all about Kona, because I deliberately haven't, like when you went out there, I want to find out all about it, but deliberately didn't want to hassle you for information so we can kind of get it fresh from the horse's mouth for the podcast, essentially. So it's a couple of months have gone by since you've raced now. Have you settled back into normal life?
Well, it was really weird, actually, because when I came back from Kona, I thought, I'm going to take a month off. I'm going to not follow plan. And I'm just going to do a bit of cycling, swimming and running. And with the thought in mind that I wanted my tattoo. So I wanted to do my tattoo, which would take me away from swimming. So I just did bits and pieces. Then I had my tattoo and I just couldn't get back into it, to be honest with you. It was really a struggle for me to... because I thought, okay, 1st of November, then I had my tattoo and then I had a small procedure which took me away from training. So I thought, okay, 1st of January. 1st of January came and it took me about a week and I still wasn't feeling it. But I'm on track now. I'm really on track. So it has took me a while. And I think that was because I've had such a busy year. This year has probably been the most races I've ever raced. I did, from March, I did the World Duathlon. I did a couple of halves. I did the full. And then unbeknown to me in Poland in August, when I found out I'd qualified, I'd got 8 weeks to then do Kona. So I've never raced that much. And I think my body was just wanting to rest. And I just followed that, really.
Yeah.
But I'm on it now. I'm on it now.
I think it's really common after athletes have either, you know, done a big goal, whether that's your first Ironman, a time at an Ironman, going to the World Championships. It's really common that afterwards it takes some time to readjust and come back down to earth. And it might be a month, it might be 3 to 6 months before you really feel like, because I know for you, to set the story, this has been like a 10-year journey to get to Kona, hasn't it? You've done sort of 5 or 6 Ironmans. Yeah. You've been racing since 2013.
Yes.
And it's a really big deal to get there.
Yeah. So I did my first, I started triathlon because I was injured as a runner and I'm local to Nottingham. So I saw the Outlaw 1 year, completely coincidentally. And I thought, oh my God, I want to do this. So I signed up for the Outlaw full and I couldn't even swim crawl. So that year, I trained in my swim. And from then on, I did the Outlaw. And then I went and did my first Ironman distance. Then I found out about Kona. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And I was coming 5th and 4th and 7th. And I was going to the ceremonies, hoping it would drop down. Never did. And I kept going. And I did an Ironman every year. And just going back to the fact that this year or last year, I did two Ironmans. Normally, after an Ironman, it's my last race and I can rest. Whereas in Poland this year, I finished Poland. I had to get straight back on it for Kona. So I think that was contributory factor to the fact that I did find it difficult then to get my mojo back after. But yet it has been 10, 11 years that I've been trying to get to Kona. And in fact, I'd come to the COVID stage when there was no races. I thought, nah, maybe I'm not going to get to Kona. You know, maybe I'll stop trying to chase it. And that's what I did. So when I went to Gdynia in Poland, I thought I'm going to just enjoy it or try to enjoy it as much as you can with no expectation. So when I came second in my age group, I thought, oh my God, maybe, you know, I've been trying too hard. I don't know. But my wish came true.
That's so great.
It was, yeah. It was amazing.
Well, when you look back over your 10 years in the sport, what was it you think that, you know, when you first saw the race happening at Outlaw, what was it about that first made you want to do it, do you think?
Oh, I think it's the mental challenge. It was the mental challenge. It was an endurance sport, which I do like that sort of training. I do like long distance training. And it was just the, oh, I can do this, the challenge, I think. It was local. So I thought, okay, I can do all the training locally. I'll know the bike course. I can swim in the lake. And I literally live a mile from home, Pierrepont. So it was meant to be. And so I just did it. I got a book, trained myself. And when I look back at the pictures, I'm just smiling all the time. It was the year, actually, it was 36 degrees for the Outlaw. That's the year I did it. And I can't remember where I came at the time. But it didn't matter to me. And then every time it's been an Ironman that I've done, I've always been pushing for a podium place or a Kona place. And as everybody knows, you know, Kona places, you've got to be the winner. You've got to be first, might drop down to second. So it was hard. It was a hard for me, actually. And I was so passionate to get there. I just kept going every year, thought, okay, I'll try this year, I'll try that year. I tried flat courses, I tried Wales, and I was, as I said, I was always fifth, sixth, seventh, yeah.
When you look back to before you joined up with us, I think you joined up with us again back in March last year. What was the biggest challenge you were facing in training, do you think, before you?
Before? Yeah, I know this sounds really funny, but I like to be told what to do. So I've tried training myself and I just like the fact that you've got your plan on Training Peaks. It uploads to your watch. You switch your watch on. You know what your session is and you do it. And I like that. I wouldn't want to, I found it difficult planning my sessions to get the best of me out of an Ironman on race day. So for me, being coached by yourselves made a huge improvement time-wise, knowing when to do sessions and the build-up and what works best. It just worked better for me. I mean, some people, I know people that just do their own set plans and it works for them. But for me, I like the planning. I like it to be done for me so I can just think, right, this is what I'm doing today. And off you go.
Yeah. So it's almost like you're one of these people who you want it taken off your plate and it's just...
Absolutely.
Tell me what to do.
Yeah. Because I was finding, oh, if I do that session, should I do that long session? But and can I move it? Will it work right? Because I wanted everything to be perfect, I suppose. That's my character. So for me to have a professional tell me this is what I need to do to get to that result works perfectly for me.
That kind of makes sense, I think, because I think it's quite common in triathlon and it's something that's not talked about. There's a certain personality type that gets drawn towards it. And we tend to be like high achievers, I guess the phrase is, like people who want to really push themselves to do something. But with that often comes a sort of I don't want to say overthinking, but a constant thinking. Am I doing the right thing? Should I do this? Should I have read about this thing? And it seems, it's funny I'm having this conversation with you now because I was talking with someone else about this just earlier. It seems if you can somehow let go of that and just say, I'm going to put all my energy into just doing the training and not worrying about whether the training's right, somehow frees up some extra energy for you.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And also, you know, it uploads to your Garmin. So you're going out and you're doing the session and your Garmin's telling you when to, you know, you've got, it counts down to your rest period and then back up. You're not having to keep look at your watch. Oh, I've got 30 seconds because, you know, everybody might not connect their Garmin to the Training Peaks. I would advise it. It's a game changer. And it even does that for you. Even when you're training, you know that, you know, you've got that added bonus of not even having to worry about, oh, I've got to run 5 minutes now and then I've got to rest for a minute, because your Garmin tells you to do that. And that was another reason that I wanted to be coached, because it all puts it into place and you don't have to worry about anything.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So talk to me a little bit about, I think one of the common questions people have, I'm putting myself in the mindset of the listener and thinking, right, we've got someone who's qualified for Kona. They've been to Kona. How's she done it almost? So let's put ourselves in the listener's mindset. Explain a little bit about what it is you do for a job and your work life, your family life, and how you balance training around all of that to give people an idea.
Yeah, so I work full time. My job doesn't extend my hours of work too much. So I have a bit of flexibility, and I've got a very good boss that understands my passion and appreciates the amount of time that I do train. So when I came onto with Team Oxygen Addict, I think one of the questions you said to me was, how often can you train? At what days can't you? What days can you? And I answered that by saying, and I'm lucky to have that, to have this. I said, I will work around the training because I have that flexibility morning and night and lunch times, actually. I haven't got small children. My children are grown up now. So I was very flexible in for you when you planned my program. I wanted the best program in terms of doing the sessions when you say, and I have that advantage. So my sessions, I do all my swimming in the morning, 100%. If I've got two sessions, I would then do, if it was a swim and a run or a bike, I would do the run in the afternoon. All my bikes would be in the evening, and all my swims would be in the morning. So I've got huge flexibility. And then the weekends, I fit my life around the training, really, because I don't have any commitments in terms of young family, and my husband's really busy in his activities and hobbies, so it works really well. I'm very lucky to have as much time as I do.
That leads us perfectly to Kona. Talk us through the Kona experience from start to finish then, because I just want to hear the full story.
How far
ahead of the race day did you get there?
Yes, I recommend. I got there on the Sunday. Was it the Sunday? Yes, the Sunday. Gosh, it's so long ago now. Yes, it was the week before. So
yeah, seven days before race day.
Yeah, I got there on the Saturday. And I'm glad I did that. And I didn't know this at the time, but there was a practice swim the whole distance on the Tuesday. So it was an event. It was a swimming event. And you had to register, and it was the whole 3.8K swim. And I was very glad I did it. And the reason for that was, there's quite a lot of swell. But for my personal reason was because my goggles, this is a really rookie error, and I hate to say this, but my goggles were all like discolored on the, I don't know if it's because they weren't that old, but I didn't have a very good view outside as I was swimming. So that alerted me to the fact that I needed to get some more goggles and practice with them before the actual race. And it's a good idea to do the session because it does give you an idea. It is quite swelly. And when you turn at the boat end at the top and come back in, because there's no beach, the water actually hits the rocks and then bounces back. So the last 200 meters is quite a challenge, actually, because it's pushing you back all the time. And the good thing about the swim as well is they do start you in age group categories. But what happens is they put the faster ones at the back. So you think you're in good clear water, and then you get a surge of group people coming through. So that's a bit unfortunate. But yes, I would suggest anybody doing the practice swim. That was the Tuesday. Then during the week, you can swim out to a coffee boat, which is really quite nice, actually. So you can swim out to it, have a coffee, swim back. And that's a nice thing that I would recommend. I also bought the Nirvana Experience. And that was a really important thing I did. And I'm glad I did it because they took you around transition. You had to pay for it all. It was a package. They took you on the bike course on a bus. They did the whole of the bike course. They dropped you off at a certain point. And then you cycled about 30 kilometers of the return section of the route and then picked you up. And that was really valuable for me because it actually made me see how the wind was, how it's attacking you from the side. There's quite a lot of side winds, and it just gives you a flavor of what it's going to be like on race day. And you meet a lot of nice people, and that was a really good thing. So I had, for the experience, I had the drive out on the and then cycle back on the bike. I had a walk round transition beforehand, private walk. There's about 12 of us, and they showed you everything and where you would go. You also got VIP entry in on race day, so you didn't have to queue up. You didn't have to pre-tattoo yourself. That was all done. You went the same route as the pros, and it's quite nice. You feel really good, really nice, really special. They really looked after you. And what else did you do? Oh, they did a run. So they took you out to the energy lab, and you did some running around there. I actually didn't do that, and I can't remember why. There was a reason, but I didn't do it. And then they did a swim session with you, just pointers on what to spot to, you know, what the swim's going to be like. And I think a lot of people were coming a lot later on in the week. So that session was good for them because they didn't have a chance to swim right out and get a feel for it. And there was a lot, you know, there was people there that perhaps wasn't very experienced on sea swimming. In fact, there was a lot of people that weren't experienced in sea swimming. And it is challenging swim, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So the build-up was really nice. Going back to your question, the build-up was really nice. 2,500 like-minded women all in one place, all chatting, all getting to meet each other. That was special. The place, they just make you feel so welcome. You are Tret, very special. And I, out of all the Ironmans I've done, this was probably the first Ironman where I wasn't nervous. I'm quite a nervous person in the lead up to a race, especially the 48 hours before. But for some reason, I wasn't. And I think it's because I've been trying to get to this race for the last 10 years. And now I've got there. I've done all the hard work, if you like. I know the race is going to be hard, but I'm going to try and enjoy it a bit more than I do when I was trying to compete to get to Kona. So the nerves weren't there as much. So I was enjoying the build-up. And having a week, you are tired, because I know I'm going off at tangents here, but when I did the practice swim on the Tuesday, I had a lot of jet lag still in me. My time wasn't great. And although that did disappoint me a bit, I realized when come race day that actually that was tiredness. So for that reason only, anybody that's planning on going to Kona this year, I would recommend going out there. If you've got that flexibility, go out there a week before.
How long did it take you to get over the jet lag, would you say? Because it's
Wednesday.
What's the time difference?
Wednesday. It was 13 hours. Was it 13 or 11?
It's almost an entire half day, which is about as difficult as it gets in terms of your body clock, isn't it?
Yes, I think it was 11 hours. It was 1 hour off half a day.
Okay.
Yes, it was Wednesday because the swim was Tuesday and I was tired. It was Wednesday. And you're waking up early. You're going to bed early and waking up really early. And it does mess with you. And also my husband as well. He felt the same because he did some of the swimming with me and the running. And yeah, so we were there Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I was all right on the fourth day.
Okay.
But I think it depends on person to person, really, I suppose. But yeah, I would recommend a week.
I think it's pretty common, isn't it, to be 3 or 4 days before you feel vaguely normal again
when
you get yourself to a big time difference, whether it's going to America or all the way around to Hawaii.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the thing you said about riding the bike course, having gone out the far end and coming back down the road from Harvey. How was that for you? What was your experience of the side winds relative to, I know you've been to Lanzarote and raced there. What was it like relative to that?
Not much different, really. I was pleasantly surprised. The wind wasn't that bad. I think we got quite a lucky day, actually. And the wind does change a lot because you're going round the island. So sometimes you've got headwind, some side wind, not very much tailwind. You'd think, actually, if it's an out and back, there should be some tailwind. I can't remember. Oh, there is. Coming out of Harvey, you've got a nice tailwind and a nice downhill. But it wasn't as bad. I've done Lanzarote, as you said, and also Barcelona. That was really windy when I did that. So it wasn't a biggie for me. But I know I could see that people were struggling, even on that short section that we did in practice. And I think that's just down to experience and what races you've done in the lead up to Kona. Yes. But the roads are super, super smooth. So that little bike ride for me prior to the race, again, was a big tick for me because it actually made me think, well, actually, it's not as bad as what I was expecting. Yeah. And the actual course isn't as bad. I think the worst thing for me was climbing, I don't know if it was 10 miles going into Harvey. You've got a headwind and it's a gradual incline. And that's the toughest bit of the bike.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Well, it was for me. It was for me. Yeah.
All right, let's go to race day then. We've covered the lead up and we've covered the surprising challenges of actually finding somewhere to buy bananas when you're there during the week.
Yeah.
Race day morning then, you've said you've managed to get yourself in the almost like the VIP lane.
Yeah, really good. Got up super early. Again, not a little nerves, but not as much as I would normally have. So I stayed about half a mile away from the start. I wanted to be close to the start to keep in the atmosphere of everything. And I didn't want the hassle of having to get taxis in because I was told that was horrendous for people that had done it in previous years. So more expensive, but you know, you've got a lot of convenience. So you can wake up, you can just walk along the ocean line, you can see it all illuminating in front of you. And literally everybody's queuing up to get signed in on the morning. And I just went through the VIP and got tattooed. Really special it was, really special. And then you just walk through. And it was a buzzing atmosphere. It was electric. And I think normally, you know, when you're going to the race morning of an Ironman, everybody's quite, well, in my experience, a bit quiet. There's nerves. You can feel the nerves. Everybody's trying to go to their bike. But this was different. This had an excitement about it. You know, you could see all the cameras and everybody being interviewed and, you know, you went in to sort your bike out and the staff there were just fantastic. You know, you don't even have to find your bike. They're there. There's people there all the time. Oh, here you are. And, you know, you just do what you do on race morning. You check everything. You put your, I had the Nirvana experience, I took my bike to Nirvana and they just gave it a once over. They repumped the tires. They checked the bike. I didn't even have to do anything. I just had to hand it to them and then put it back on my place on my number. So that was another good thing, because everybody's trying to get stirrup pumps and they don't let you bring your own in. Unlike normal races, you're not allowed any stirrup pumps. So there was a bit of flapping from people I could see trying to do that, but I didn't have that experience. And then, you know, obviously then I checked my bags, make sure everything was in there. You were allowed, I think, were you allowed to go in there? No, you weren't allowed to go different. You weren't allowed to go to your red and blue bags. And that's okay. Different from other Ironman experiences. So then you've got there's quite a lot of singing. You've got the local singers doing nice things. You've got the commentary. You come out of transition and then it's just a case of waiting. They're talking to you all the time about things. There's a lot of, groups of tri clubs that are together, especially the Americans and the Canadians. There was a hell of a lot of those. I forgot to mention, 2 days prior, there was a Parade of Nations. That's well worth going to. That was amazing. Anyway, back to race morning. So, you know, you're getting your mindset, and then you go and queue in your race age group, and then the professionals go off. There's a big cannon and it's just electric. It's just electric. And I wasn't too nervous, actually. I was really surprised at myself. And then they let you in your age groups 5 minutes. They're not in age group order. The younger age groups were after us. So it was the professionals, then it was 60 above, and then it was my age group, and then it was the younger people. And then the gun goes off, and then you just focused. Do you want me to carry on my race?
I want to know about the swim. I want to know how. Yeah. I've seen photographs of people swimming there and describing the underwater descriptions. How was the experience for you?
The experience was great. I had a bit of a goggle malfunction, and it's my own fault because I did buy some new goggles and I did practice with them, but they weren't the goggles that I would normally use. Rookie error. I did buy these goggles and I didn't buy polarized ones because the sun wasn't ahead. It was to your left. So I was talking to a coach there and he said that he uses clear. And I thought, okay, I can see why. Because on the practice swim, it was a bit dark with my polarized ones on. And I said that I couldn't see very well. So I got clear ones, which was the right decision. It was the right decision. However, I got Roka ones and they've got a split back strap. They're not one strap, they're two. And the top strap was obviously a bit too loose. So it kept coming over me, the top strap.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite well enough adjusted, was it not?
It wasn't adjusted enough, not for that distance, because I didn't use them in the swim practice. Also, I did another silly thing. The night before, I washed my hair. Now, I don't know for all the women out, well, I'm guys actually, because you all wear a swim cap, but I conditioned it. And I remember on a previous race, I once conditioned and washed my hair. And the next day, my hair was that soft that my cap was sliding off. And I remember years ago saying, remember, Nadia, do not wash your hair before race day. Do not wash your hair before race day. And I used to do that. I didn't used to wash it. And I must have forgotten. And I always race with dirty hair, but I didn't on this occasion. So my cap was slipping, which I think was promoting that little extra strap. And literally, my cap was on the top of my head and the strap was coming over. At first, I thought it was a fish. So I had to, I had to keep stopping. I stopped about four times to try and get my cap back on. And my goggles. So, yeah.
There you go. There's the tip. Don't swim with clean hair.
I promise you, it slides the swim cap off. And yeah, don't wear goggles that you perhaps haven't done a full 3.8K swim in. But anyway, I didn't let it upset me, because sometimes when that happens, you can easily get distracted by it, and it can put a negative vibe on what you're actually doing. So I thought, no, I did have to keep pulling it down because I thought I can't lose my cap and I didn't want to lose my goggles. So I kept doing that, got to the end of the boat where the turnaround is and started to come back. And I was just focused on getting to that finish line. It did seem like forever. The first half seemed a lot quicker. And you can see all the hotels on the seafront, and they seem to take ages to get past one. It's quite funny. But yeah, it is very swelly. It gets very busy. Even though you're in your own age group, there are swimmers that then come past you, the faster swimmers of the front of those age groups behind you. And it does get quite busy as it funnels to the finish because you sort of go in like that. But yeah, I was pleased when the swim's not my favourite discipline, to be fair. So I was pleased to get out. And you come out to a lovely shower, a quite vibrant shower, lots of support, very exciting. You grab your bag as you do and onto the run. The run's a lovely run. So you actually do an out and back first, south, yeah. And I think that's probably about 6 miles. And then you start go up and join the Queen K. It is very windy. I think the worst thing at that point is, and I probably haven't mentioned that for the bike, is the heat. There wasn't one cloud. I can't remember going in any shade. And I did burn quite badly. I didn't know that until the day after. So it didn't affect my race. But I did put P20 on. And there are people in transition offering sun cream. I would recommend it. Even if you say you've put P20 on, it did nothing for me. And I thought that would have been enough protection. It wasn't. My arms were red raw. I peeled terribly afterwards. And yes, so on the run, you know, you start off in broad daylight. It's still quite hot, still quite windy. And it's a hell of a long way out on the Queen K. And you've got mentally to be quite strong. You are spreading out a little bit more as well. I did take a head torch, actually. I wasn't going to. And it was only through discussions with the Nirvana group that everybody had brought a head torch. So I purchased one of those. And it didn't start getting dark till I was coming out of the energy lab. But I'm glad I had it. There was people there that were struggling because it's pitch black. You can't see anything until you get back into Kona. You can see other people and you can sometimes run with other people, but it doesn't always work like that. And especially around the energy lab, it wasn't as smooth on the pavement as the main Queen K. So I was glad I had a head torch, actually. And it's just mental. The hardest bit for me on the run was the energy lab bit, because that's the turnaround point, if you like, but it isn't. It's quite a long stint round the energy lab. It's not as quick. I thought it was a bit shorter than that, but it wasn't. It seemed to go on for ages. Once you get back onto the Queen K, you can see the lights in the distance of the town. And yeah, people tend to pick it up a little bit from there. It was really strange because when I did Poland, just a little story here, when I did Ironman Poland, I was racing against first place and she was an Italian and I'm half Italian. And I beat her on the swim, I beat her on the bike. And this is in Poland. And on the run, it's multiple laps and I could see that she was getting a bit closer to me. So I thought, there's nothing I can do. I wasn't at my full fitness for Poland. So I didn't have as much run training as I expected to for that. And she caught me and passed me. So at Kona, she hadn't passed me. So I knew I'd beat her on same age group. I knew I'd beat her on the swim. I knew I'd beat her on the bike. And I saw her. She'd started the run as I was in probably 4 miles in. So I thought, oh, she's going to catch me maybe. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. and she passed me at mile 25. Just as we were, there was a climb. She passed me at the bottom of the climb just before we got into Kona. And I thought, I'm going to let her go because I'm doing my best here. You know, I was working hard because I knew we were close to the finish. As I reached the top before we dropped down on Pilani, I saw her at the top. She was walking. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's her. She's walking. So I was running still at this point. So I thought, I've got to put a spurt on here. But knowing full well, I got to continue that for a mile. So I passed her. I dropped down Pilani and I beat her by about 40 seconds.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. So I've missed the bike, haven't I? Have I missed the bike?
You didn't tell us about the bike. And I was going to say, let's bring you back to that. Because
I went from swim to run, didn't I?
Yeah. The bike course is obviously, it's the iconic part of the course, isn't it? What was your experience like of the bike course?
Yeah,
and so many people being there.
Yeah, there were some strong competitors out there. From the start, you could see everybody was pushing. And likewise, it was hard. It was very shortly into the bike, you could feel the heat. The first out and back seems a bit sheltered because it's a short out and back, the same as the run. It's when you get on the Queen K and it is undulating and there is a headwind. So it's harder than what you think. The inclines are quite shallow. It's not like Ironman Wales by any long shot, but they're deceivingly hard. And I think it's the wind and it's the heat. And you can almost feel it hitting the ground and coming back onto your face. So that's difficult. I use precision hydration for all my fluid, nutrition, everything. And I'd got it down to a T, absolutely. And I did go to precision hydration tent. And I had a word with, I can't remember his name now, begins with D. Is it Daniel? David?
David Levin.
Yeah. And I just went through my plan. And he says, you've hit the nail on the head. And I had the nutrition, the liquid nutrition that I had, gels that I'd put in a bottle. So I didn't have to keep ripping them. I'd got water, two lots of water that I just kept making sure I drank before the next feed station. And it's so easy, as everybody I'm sure knows, it's so easy to forget to drink, but you can't in this race because it's so dehydrating. And I did hit the nail on the head with the hydration because it's hot, it's windy, and yeah, you've got to keep hydrating 100%. And I made sure I did that at every feed station. Don't pass one. Yeah, don't pass one. And sometimes you may have water, throw it on you, don't waste that water. Just keep pouring water over you. And it does make a difference. It does cool you down. But it is a long slog. You know, getting to Harve is hard. The last 10 miles, I think I mentioned earlier in the chat, that 10 miles climb was difficult for me. I think it was difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, but once you turn at Harve, you've got your personal needs if you want it at Harve. As you turn, there is a personal needs there. And then it's a lovely down, but it's not over yet. You know, you've still got a long way to go and it's tough. It's the heat and the wind, definitely. It's not like Wales where you're climbing out of your saddle. Yeah.
It sounds like you got the full World Championships experience. It sounds like every single thing in. And you also, the thing I really like about this story is the competition between you and the woman that you raced at Poland for first. It sounds like you were running up Mark and Dave Hill, essentially, against each other. And then you managed to get her back, which rarely happens, I think, in Hawaii. It tends to be whoever's first to the top of that hill wins. But
yeah, no.
We've done the bike. Take us back to the end of the run then. You see your competitor, you pull up alongside her.
Yes. Well, so it's not a steep hill by any means, but it's enough at that point to make it hard. And I thought, you know, there's not far to go. And I was running up that hill, not fast, but I was running. So I was, after she passed me, and I thought, you've got to let her go and it will be what I'll try, but I can't go any faster. I was going as fast. She obviously wanted to pass me. She did clock me. I could see that she'd clocked me at the beginning of the run. about mile four. So I let her go. I continued running. It is still pitch black at this point, so I couldn't see her ahead from other people. So I didn't know it was her. And it wasn't until I got about probably 10 meters from her, I thought, oh, is that Manine? And then I thought, it is. And I thought to myself, I need to run past her. I can't run and then fade because we're still climbing at this point. I've got to run past her and then I've got to just keep going, you know. So I had to go with vengeance. So that's what I did. And I didn't look back. I didn't turn round. I just went. I remember going at the bottom of Pilani. It's still very deceiving because you've still got quite a long way to go. And I thought, oh, have I overcooked it too early? And I just kept going and I just put it all out there, absolutely everything out there. And I thought, well, if she passes me back, there's nothing I can do about it, but I've given it everything. And yeah, I came over the finish line and it's an amazing finish, by the way. And I'd come down, I was being sort of chaperoned away and I just heard her name coming in and I did sort of clench my fist a little bit, but I am really competitive. Plus she's Italian as well.
That's fantastic.
But the finish, if I can just explain the finish, they line chaperones up. So for every finisher, there's two chaperones. They give you a really nice world championship towel that is going to be with me forever. And there's two chaperones and they walk you to get your finisher's t-shirt, drink, whatever you want. They walk with you. I couldn't believe it. I felt like royalty. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And they literally walk you. How was the race? This, that and the other. Oh, you've done so well. The compliments. You get your t-shirt and you get this fantastic medal that weighs a ton. It is amazing. And then you can go and have food and whatever you want, you know, to rehydrate. But me, I always want to go and see my husband. So I go straight through all that because I just want to be with my husband. But the aftercare is spot on. It's magical. It's magical. And then when you finish, you can see the chaperones all queuing up for people still coming in. It's the organization and the commitment and dedication of all those volunteers. Amazing.
So my next question was going to be, and I think I kind of already know the answer to this, but when you look back over 10 years, was it all worth it, the 10-year battle to get yourself to Kona? What's your reflections on that?
Oh, gosh, it was so worth it. You know, I've been quite down over the years when I've not got my when I've not qualified for one reason or another. And people say, oh, but you came fifth, you came sixth, you did amazing. But I only did that race so I could qualify for Kona. You know, and I've gone to every award ceremony hoping it would come down and it never did. And I'll tell you now, I've said to my husband so many times, maybe I shouldn't do Ironman anymore. I'm never going to get to Kona. I'm never going to get to Kona, you know. And in the past, I have quit, sold all my stuff. This is before COVID, and then bought all new stuff because I didn't want to finish and I've sold everything. My tax, my bike, all my garments, you name it, I sold it all. And 6 months later, I'm buying all fresh again because it's not over for me. And I've done that and my husband will vouch for me on that one. And yeah.
I've heard that before. I've heard that story a lot of times from
people. Have you really?
It's a very all or nothing sport, isn't it? And I think you can try really hard and commit to something and not get the ultimate result you were looking for and think, okay, time to move away from this. It happened really recently with an athlete I worked with very closely. And I think they'll be back because there's to scratch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. That's advice for anyone who's currently sitting there in a bit of a funk and thinking, I'm going to sell all my kit. We're both saying don't do that.
No.
Unless it's a good excuse to buy a new kit.
Well, there is that. But yeah, it was well worth it. You know, I mean, Hawaii cost a lot of money. We did go for 2 weeks. So we had a week before and we had a week after. You don't have to do that. If you were going to do anything and you wanted to really put all your effort into the race, I would go a week before because that put me in a very, not relaxed position for the race, but a very motivated, determined, and not too many nerves, because I can get really nervous before a race. And bearing in mind, actually, when I did Kona, the race at Gdynia where I qualified, the race was cancelled. So I hadn't had a 3.8 swim experience, sea swim experience, because it was cancelled. Then I did Weymouth 4 weeks prior to Ironman Worlds, and that was sea swim was cancelled. So I was quite nervous about the sea swim from that perspective, because I'd not done a sea swim that year because of the racers cancelling them. I think it was all, from the problem that they had in Cork, I think just made them think a bit more about it. Can this swim go ahead? So I hadn't swam. So for me to do that practice swim on the Tuesday before the race on the Saturday was paramount.
Yeah, I think that's a really
confidence.
Good people. Yeah, getting to swim in the sea if you're not a regular sea swimmer is really important for any race, I think, let alone Kona.
Yeah.
Okay, my final question then. I want you to think back to where you were when you first saw the Outlaw 10 years ago. And maybe there's somebody out there right now who's in a similar position that you were 10 years ago. You know, maybe they're thinking about entering the first Ironman. What advice would you give them?
To enter their first Ironman full distance.
Yeah.
Go for it. Because people at work, they say, I don't know how you do it. And my answer to that is, if you train, you can do it. You know, anybody can. Anybody, if they put their mind to it, can do an Ironman if they put the time in and enjoy the training. You know, just grab it with both arms, because the feeling of finishing an Ironman is, oh, it's unbelievable. It's, I don't get that feeling when I do a 70.3, but I do get that feeling when I do a full Ironman. I can't even explain that feeling. And all that hard work, you know, when perhaps, you know, the weather's shit and you don't want to go out, or you don't want to do your indoor bike, whatever it is, it's worth it for that. Because that's sometimes when I'm feeling a bit, oh, I don't want to do this, I look at the bigger picture and I think, yeah, I want to do it, because the finish and how you feel doing that, a huge achievement. It is possible. It is. Yeah.
I really think that's going to help some people. I think listening to your experiences, it's been really motivating for me. And I think if someone's out there thinking about entering the first one, I'd just like to think you've nudged somebody over the line and they'll just go and click enter and go and do
If I can just finish, because I thought, okay, well, when I get to Kona, am I going to finish now? Because I've got to where I want to be. And a little bit of me after Kona thought, yeah, maybe I should like finish at the world. There's two worlds, isn't there? There's one in France. So now I'm working it out. So I'm going to do the Europeans this year in Almere, because I've qualified for that in September. So nothing too big this year, because last year was manic. And then next year I'm going to do Ironman Wales and the out long course. So practice long course, Ironman Wales, which would then be the qualifier for Nice in 2026.
Nice.
So that's my plan, because you do have to think long term about Ironmans, because favorite Ironmans, popular Ironmans, they get taken quickly and they fill up. So you do have to have a little bit of a plan. So my only goal now, I suppose, is doing Nice Worlds. And then who knows?
Well, you have to make a promise to me that when you go and race Nice Worlds, you'll come back on and you'll tell us about your Nice Worlds experience.
Oh my God, I'll be 60 age group then.
No way.
Yeah, I'll be a
60. Really?
And actually, next year when I do Wales, I'll be in a new age group. So that's another reason why you pick your races, you know, because it's all tactical trying to get to Kona. You've got to pick the right races.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, Nadia, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk to
us.
I've really enjoyed it. I've loved hearing your story.
Yeah.
So great when you get someone who finally gets the prize after 10 years of a graft to get to go to Kona. I think it's brilliant and it's been awesome. Here are some discount codes and deals for you to wrap this up. Over at precisionfuelandhydration.com, You've heard Nadia raving about them. They're the best electrolyte and fuel supplements out there. So use the code OXYGEN24 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. You can even go to their website and use the free fueling and hydration planning tool to receive a personalized strategy for your next race. You can even book a free one-to-one video consultation with PFNH's athlete support team, and they'll be happy to help you nail your race nutrition plan like Nadia did and help you perform at your best on race day. And over at teamoxygenaddict.com, I think we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. Book a call with us and see if you'd be a good fit for joining the team. And let's see how we can best help you achieve your triathlon goals for the coming season. All right, guys, I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast.